Jocelyn Linder's new book, The Family Gene, is a moving memoir and a suspenseful medical detective story about her family's search to identify a genetic mutation that's already killed seven of its members. The mutation affects the liver and the body's vascular system and can lead to lymphedema so severe that breathing and digestion are impaired. And it has also been inherited by seven additional members who are still alive, including Miss Linder. As she looked for clues to uncover more information about this illness, she also ended up uncovering stories about her family's past. Jocelyn Linder is a regular contributor to the New York Post, and her work has been featured on This American Life and Morning Edition. I spoke with her in March, and we are replaying that interview for you now. I began by asking her, does this illness or genetic mutation even have a name?
Not yet, nope. There's a team at Harvard that's studying it. And they're hopefully going to publish any minute, and then they'll be able to name it.
And it's just limited to your family?
Yes.
Now that the gene mutation that causes the illness has been identified, are you optimistic that you, your sister, and your cousins who inherited it will be better able to live with it?
Yes. Obviously, there's a lot more hope once we've identified not just the gene, but the mechanism that's causing the condition, which we have. And that's something that I think a lot of people with rare diseases, they're not that far. So I feel like we're better ahead of the game than some people.
Although this is the rarest of all kinds of diseases, since it's limited really to one gene line.
Yeah, that's true.
When did you become aware that the illness was a family problem and might have a genetic cause?
When I was probably 18, my father first started showing symptoms of this condition. He was incredibly healthy my whole life and didn't get colds, just was a very healthy guy. And one day he started swelling in his ankles after a flight, and he took some water pills and he passed out at the top of the stairs. My sister and I were watching TV in the basement. We hear this thud and we ran up and we see our dad sort of for the first time impaired and looking very dazed. His eyes were glassed over. And we found out later that he had taken this water pill that was an incredibly strong water pill. And it was because he had the swelling. And the swelling very steadily over the next 5 years filled his entire body cavity.
He was a doctor, so his first impulse would have been to self-medicate, I assume.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that the... Did doctors suspect that this was a genetic issue, or did it take a while?
The first person to think it was a genetic condition was my great aunt. My great aunt Joni showed up at the hospital one day, holding the 20-year-old medical file of her husband, who had died at the age of 34, and she was the first one to say, "Your father, I think, has what Nathan had, what your uncle Nathan had."
And then, didn't your father's uncle and your father die without ever receiving any kind of accurate diagnosis of what was killing them?
That's true. I mean, I think my father at least got, figured out it was a genetic disease, which was probably not very comforting for him, but my great uncle passed away after, spending 10 months at the NIH and really trying to figure things out. In 1961, he finally passed away.
So this was before he could have had access to the internet or all sorts of other things. In fact, this is before the gene, what was it called? Where they just laid out all of our...
The genome.
Yeah, the genome project.
Do you mean my father or my uncle? Both.
Well, in both cases.
It's true. Yeah, my dad died in 1996, and the human genome was mapped for the first time. I believe it was published in 2003.
Mm-hmm. So. To what extent did not knowing what was wrong make it more difficult for your family to cope with your father's illness?
It was rough. It was. After my father died, my mother wrote a really lovely essay that she called "The Loneliness of a Rare Disease." I do think that aspect was incredibly profound for all of us, kind of going through these 4 years. I was in college at the time, and it was unable, we couldn't express what was going on. People would say, "What's happening to your father?" And we didn't really have an answer. I know among his patients and among his colleagues, there was a rumor going around that he had AIDS, because at the time, I think there was a secretiveness around AIDS. And my father was sort of had the secretiveness, even though we weren't being secretive, we just didn't know, around his illness.
You write very movingly about his struggle. And can you tell us a bit about what he went through?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think for my father, it really it was very much about finding answers. So he put himself into a lot of situations where he was, you know, sort of made sicker than maybe he would have been. But he, you know, he because of lymphedema, and it was this type of lymph that doesn't normally leak into the body cavity, certainly when no organs are threatened. So I know you mentioned that the illness complicates the liver, but it actually doesn't. Our livers are very healthy. It's the vasculopathy, the veins running through our liver that have all the problems. So in my father's case, all of his organs were incredibly healthy, but he was leaking this excessive amount of this fluid that was very uncomfortable and actually leached nutrients.
And so, did he keep on working while he was sick?
He did, actually. He worked for a long time. He felt, I think, mostly okay, other than the swelling. So he did try to keep working, but then eventually he had to stop.
You recall being embarrassed when you took him to a restaurant for dinner as his illness was progressing and he threw up in the dining room. It must have been painful to relive those difficult experiences when you were writing the book.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many, and I was, you know, when it all was happening, I was, you know, so young that I think I was also at those ages where you are just embarrassed in general, and I mostly felt, you know, lived out this experience feeling embarrassed. I think that was my default emotion all the time, and looking back on it, I almost have this tremendous guilt that that was my default emotion. I didn't have the kind of compassion I wish I had had at the time.
Well, this was such a mysterious situation. There was no way for you to say, oh, gee, Dad has this unique genetic problem that we have to think a lot more about and consider for the rest of the family.
It's true.
You would have had a very different reaction.
Yeah, there were no guidebooks and there was nobody really to look to or talk to.
After your father's aunt showed up with her late husband's medical records, his case was taken up by Dr. Christine Seidman, whom you call Dr. Cricket. Why Dr. Cricket?
Actually, the very first time I ever met her, she looked at me and said, call me Cricket. And, you know, she's this incredibly bubbly, warm person. And I tried to, but for years I just called her Dr. Seidman. And then eventually I think we came to agree on sort of Dr. Cricket.
One of the world's leading genetic researchers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She's at the Harvard Medical School.
She still is. Yeah, she's amazing.
And you and Dr. Cricket developed a warm relationship from the start, didn't she, as part of her study, provide testing and care for you as you began to show symptoms of the illness when you didn't have health insurance?
I know. Yeah, in my, you know, back before there was a pre-existing condition, you know, got wiped out in the country, I lived in Ohio, and I was told because I had a heart murmur that I wasn't, even though I was quite healthy, I wasn't eligible for insurance. So I didn't have it for many years. And Dr. Seidman, Dr. Cricket, was amazing because she would allow me to fly in. She would sometimes bring me in under the guise of her grants that she had for studying us and for studying other conditions and, you know, make sure that everything was okay and give me some reassurance.
Do you think about the current situation and the possibility that pre-existing conditions might once again become a major concern of people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think in a way, the good news is that, I mean, if you can call this good news, I think all of us are about to know quite a bit about our genomes. It's so inexpensive now to get your genome mapped. And we're all going to know so many different ways we could die or get sick. And I just really feel like, you know, as a part of, you know, that community, it's going to be harder and harder for health insurance companies easier and easier for them to block more and more people. But, you know, hopefully because it'll be so many of us, we can band together.
And in situations like yours, the pre-existing condition is totally not understood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what they'll do with that.
Jocelyn Linder, Joselin, Linder. Her book, The Family Gene, A Mission to Turn My Deadly Inheritance into a Hopeful Future. We will continue our conversation. The book, by the way, is published by Echo. Stay with us for more. We're back with a rebroadcast of a conversation I had with Jocelyn Linder last March. Her latest book, The Family Gene, is about her search to uncover a rare genetic mutation that has affected her and many members of her family. I continued the conversation by asking her, Didn't you and your husband have your genomes mapped by the commercial site 23andMe? What did you learn from that?
We did. I think my husband was more excited. My genome has been mapped, so I wasn't as interested. But, you know, it's a boutique site, so they largely focus on ethnic backgrounds, things like that. So it was just very funny. My husband had a very mixed sort of, they give you a pie chart. So he had many colors in many places. And mine was just like entirely, you know, this orange Ashkenazi Jewish background.
But they wouldn't have spotted the gene that we're talking about.
I don't believe so. I don't know what the laws are around those boutique sites at this point. I know that recently they've allowed some of them to add more disease genes, but I don't think they can't just, you know, tell people that they're sick. That would be really dangerous.
So let's talk about the science behind the illness and what Dr. Cricket and her staff discovered. Several reviews of your book pointed out how skillful you are in explaining complex science to a general audience. Who was the first member to be affected by the mutation?
They believe patient zero was my great-great-grandmother, so that would be six generations ago from my niece and nephew, so five generations back from me. She was born in Russia and moved to the U.S. when she was a teenager.
And they believe that the mutation started with her?
Yeah, the only reason they say that is because she has swollen ankles in a lot of pictures that sort of are one of the symptoms of the family gene, although she did die when she was much older, in her, I believe, 80.
Well, the men who are affected by this die younger than women, it seems, and we'll get into that as well. But do scientists have any idea why suddenly you have a genetic mutation like this?
I mean, it's very rare. I think it's been called a 1 in a billion mutation. It's an orphan disease, and you know, I don't think we've seen too many sort of spontaneously occur, you know, that we've been able to watch in this way. But of course, all that we know about genetics is relatively new, so that's I think in part why we're seeing that with us.
And it's passed on. It was passed on through her X chromosome.
Yeah,
and to her daughter May, your father's grandmother.
That's correct. Yeah, and they know that because I think that one of the first things Dr. Seidman noticed was that women did seem to be impacted by the gene differently. And so I think just very simple genetics is women have two X chromosomes. Typically, men have an X and a Y.
So the X in the man had a more powerful impact than
right.
The X and the other X?
That's right, because I think in men, it's safe to say that they don't have a healthy X to refer to, so all the information they're getting is from this one X.
But living a long time can be problematic in its own way. May died in 1955 after suffering for years from swollen limbs and struggling to breathe as her lungs filled with, as you write here, a thick, sticky lymphatic fluid. The story you tell about her is really moving. Wasn't she incorrectly diagnosed as having pleurisy and isolated away from her family with patients suffering from tuberculosis?
Oh, yeah. That was much of her adult life. She got sick when she was about 36. She always had swelling in her ankles, but then she died at 55, and almost 20 years were a struggle.
And she and her husband had five children. Do we know how many of them inherited the chromosome that contained the gene mutation?
We do. Three inherited the gene.
And how many of those became ill? All three?
Her son actually got sick right after she died. I mean, it was so closely connected that I think there was some discussion that maybe it was linked. However, I think because May's presentation was so drastically different, they kind of put it aside. They weren't sure. So it was a background story. But yeah, her son got sick and then died 3 years after he got sick. And then her middle daughter, so she had my grandmother and then another girl, my Aunt Norma, she passed away at 75 of the gene and of the same problems my dad had.
Your father was a member of the family's next generation. He inherited the mutated gene, as we've said, but he had a brother and a sister. Did they inherit it too?
Yes, my uncle also passed away of the gene. So I think one of the big tragedies that I witnessed in this whole experience was my grandmother watching her two boys having to, and my grandfather as well, for at least my father and then some of his son. He actually passed away right before his son, almost like he needed to not see it.
Then 7 years after your father's death, you noticed that your ankles had begun to swell. How old were you?
I was in my 20s. I don't remember the exact moment. It was maybe a little bit of a progressive thing, but then once it was there, it kind of just stayed with me for a really long time, and then has since sort of shifted a little bit up into my legs, but it's about the same.
You made an appointment to see Dr. Cricket, and that's when you learned for the first time that a doctor in her lab had discovered the mutated gene.
Yeah. They had mapped our gene, which was an incredible accomplishment at the time. I think when we imagine it now, it's happening in a computer. You know, you just kind of put in some information and the computer tells you what the genome is. And this was a person, Dr. Meredith Moore, sitting and slogging through every single gene and chromosome and just kind of finding it, you know, through a microscope.
So they can look at all of the genomes of your family members and spot which ones have the mutation, which don't?
Yeah, I mean, she had to go through everybody. You know, she went through everybody. And she actually was comparing my family, you know, my bloodline family members to members of my family that were not genetically related, like my uncle's wife, who's my aunt, but not genetically related to me.
Were any of your family anxious about your decision to write this book?
Initially, there were, but we've been talking about making the story public for a long time. When you have a rare disease, it is a constant battle for attention and resources. So I think that everyone understood the need to sort of tell the story publicly, get information, and keep things moving. But I think that there were some people who were a little bit worried.
And is it an expensive thing to have to deal with? Does health insurance pay for, first of all, what treatments are there?
So my condition, what I learned later was that I have a blockage in a vein in my liver that's can be pretty catastrophic. It can lead to these very fragile pathways where blood is flowing, and if they burst, then you have a problem. So they tried a procedure on me called a TIPS, which is, I don't even remember what it stands for. It's a long, a long thing, but it's like they put a shunt in the vein to try to prop it open. And mine failed, but that is a procedure that has worked on some family members. It didn't work on myself. And there's a couple people that haven't tried it yet, but that's one. And then we're hoping actually that pretty soon there's going to be a lot coming at us that's going to be helpful.
Well, once you know that there's a mutated gene, how does that affect the decision to have children, you and other people of your generation?
It's actually been, we feel so lucky because of the work Dr. Seidman's done and the mapping of the gene. My sister was able to do a procedure called IVF. It's basic IVF with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. And so my niece and nephew don't have the gene.
She could see that when the child was still in the uterus.
That was actually, before they were even implanted. They make the embryos, you know, these five-day-old blastocysts, they're called. And the doctor looks at those and says, I see that these two don't have the gene, so we'll implant those two. And that's how that worked. And so we feel really lucky, like we have this tremendous opportunity to stop the gene. Right now, there are 23 children in the sixth generation of my family, and none of them has the gene.
Hmm.
And my husband and I made a choice to not have children.
So if they don't have the gene, then they're not going to be able to pass it on to the next generation.
Exactly. And it's like it is literally like stopping something like cystic fibrosis or sickle cell, where you see, you know, we know exactly how many people carry our gene, and we know how to stop it.
Although you've had several serious health scares, are you optimistic that, like many of your female relatives, you will be able to continue to do things like write books and appear on National Public Radio?
I am an incredibly optimistic person, so yes, of course. And I think it's the best way to live. I mean, we all have, you know, we're all going to die. And I think that it's really important to live the best life you can and not spend every day worrying about how that's going to happen.
You've given your book a subtitle, A Mission to Turn My Deadly Inheritance into a Hopeful Future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody has a similar situation, not the mutated gene you have, but a different mutated gene, do you think that scientists are better prepared to spot it right away because of what happened in your family? Is this story well known throughout the scientific community?
I think it's building up. People are starting to know more about it, and certainly the studies that Dr. Cricket did are informing many genetic studies. And I also, I feel very much like we live at the best possible time to, it's never a good time to have a genetic condition, but if you're going to have one, now is the time to have it because we know so much more than we ever did. And we're on the precipice of so much possibility.
Are you still in contact with Dr. Cricket?
Yes, very much.
Has she told you that she's had seen similar situations with other families, or is this really unique?
Well, that's the first thing that they do. So back, 1994, they were scouring the globe looking for people. And there was internet. It was actually very new then. And I remember them saying, we're using this technology called the internet, and they really looked.
But there could be other kinds of mutations, not necessarily the same one that you had. And I suspect that there may be other families going through something similar with different kinds of symptoms.
Yep. I mean, they call our condition one in a billion, but I bet in the next few years they'll see that there's a lot more than we ever knew.
Well, genetic mutations have continued throughout the course of human history. In some cases, they've created good things. In some cases, they have led to inheritable diseases that have spread throughout the human population.
That's true. I mean, a condition like cystic fibrosis is 52,000 years old. It's like 1,600 or 2,600 generations. I mean, it's really old. The first person was a long time ago, and our condition is, six generations.
What's been the response to the book so far?
Really lovely. I've had a lot of really positive feedback. A lot of people, I think, really enjoying learning about the science, but also, in a what I like to think is a fun way. I'm not a super sciencey person, so I wanted to explain it to myself in a way that was relatable and fun.
It follows the basic rules laid down by Gregor Mendel.
We talk about him. We introduce a lot of the history of medical genetics and the story behind it.
Congratulations! It's a very moving book. I was excited to meet you and see how you were doing.
Thank you so much.